everything else falls away. The way the world sees us. The way we... Why?
Hello and welcome back to A Stark Contrast, where we discuss the differences and similarities from Marvel Comics to their MCU counterparts. And we are your hosts, Jeffrey.
And I.
Hello, hello, and welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back, everybody. Guess what Jeff just made me do? Yeah. He just made me watch the Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh trailer. And I'm just like, I am a broken person. I don't know if I can, I don't know, man.
I told Dial, I was like, your two favorite actors are in this movie starring together. I was like, we have to watch this trailer at least once. She was like, she succumbed and we watched it and we recorded our reaction. You could hear that.
On Patreon.
If you join our Patreon and become a patron, it's on there. It's hilarious. It's labeled as a rom-com. I would like to respectfully disagree.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Especially with that studio. They're so good at what they do, but I think that is false advertising. they will get sued by me, like all those people that sued because Ana de Armas was not in that movie. Yeah, sure. No, it looks great though.
But so yeah, go check it out if you're not a Patreon patron and become one to hear that.
Hear my pain in audio. but yes, hello, here we are.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, we're 2 weeks away from Comic Con.
That we are, and 2 weeks away from Deadpool and Wolverine.
So we're going to get into it. But first, some news. So I'm sure you see this. I didn't chat you about it because I wanted to talk about it on the show. But yeah, Mark Ruffalo flexed his advocate and activist muscles, and he had the original Avengers join him in the recording of the first film entirely in Native Lakota dialect of the Teton Sioux Native American peoples.
That's kind of crazy.
That's kind of mind-blowing to me. I was like, because when I was looking on social and I was scrolling through and I was like, why are all these Avengers clips coming up?
Yeah.
And then I actually turned on the audio because I was like, wait, the video footage of them. I was like, wait, what is happening here? So this process took over 15 months. It includes 62 Dakota language speakers. The elders were apparently the highest paid on the project, which... good on them for giving back and paying it forward that way. And the dub is already available on Disney Plus. So this is officially a thing. And it, again, like, this is incredible because all of the actors had to speak in Lakota. So they're doing the inflections.
That's crazy.
To get back in that headspace of acting out the grunts and the action and everything.
Or in speaking in that language.
In a completely other language is incredible. So I hope people enjoy that. It'd be interesting to watch. I've never really thought about it
before. I gotta check it out.
Yeah, especially because it's like a new meets old type of thing. But yeah, that's an interesting little thing that's officially available. And then in new stuff, big news, our first look and teaser poster for Agatha All Along officially dropped. Dude, I'm so into it.
I did not know what to expect, but what I saw, I liked.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I do like it. Seems like a step even further into the witchcraft aspect that WandaVision kind of touched into, you know? Like, even in WandaVision, it wasn't so much that it progressed into a scary tone.
Yeah.
This is definitely more horror based,
like,
I feel.
Witchy, coven. This is where we're... this is where we're going.
Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, almost.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which I did enjoy a lot. I'm super down. I know there's some mixed reviews because no fan base comes without them.
Of course. But I love Aubrey Plaza, so...
oh, she's so great. I'm so excited. Yeah, and Catherine Hahn, of course.
She's so good.
Absolutely slaying as Agatha all over again. And so the series premieres on September 18th. Do we know if it's the entire or is it going to be a weekly? It's probably a weekly.
I think I saw a 2-episode premiere.
That's correct. Yes.
Think it'd be weekly. Weekly. Thank God.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't do binge.
The binge, no. The binge is, I think the day of the binge is behind us.
It's not, but we binge watched The Bear season 3.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I did too. I did last weekend.
Yeah.
So great. And speaking of The Bear, related but not related, San Diego Comic-Con, they're going to have a pop-up restaurant. I don't know to what length. I'm sure it's just a quote unquote restaurant.
But it's an activation with The Bear.
Activation with FX. Yeah. And I'm like, I will stand in line. I want to yell at people and say, cousin. Or yes, chef. Yes, chef.
Quarters! Hands! Hands!
Hands. Yes, exactly. So yeah.
Please take pics. I want to see how that is.
I hope I can get into that one. But yes. And then one other thing I wanted to talk about before we get into this. But as we're recording on New Comic Book Wednesday. And so a brand new era of X-Men has officially popped off.
Mm.
And with the arrival of X-Men number one, written by Jed McKay and illustrated by Ryan Stegman. And so this is a new formulation of the team. It's post-Krakoa. They're no longer on the mutant island. And so Cyclops has a very interesting team with him this time around. And I believe it is, can I name it off the top of my head? I'm going to forget one character. I already know this already. But it is Cyclops, Magic, which is Colossus' sister.
Oh, wow.
Juggernaut.
Uh-huh.
Quentin Quire, an Omega-level telepath and telekinetic, I believe.
Yeah.
If not both. Psylocke.
Okay.
Magneto.
Wow.
And then the last character, I'm forgetting her name. But it is a very interesting lineup. I read it this morning. It's pretty good. Oh, and Beast.
Wow.
It's very, very interesting. I'm curious. And so they basically have displaced and relocated in Alaska at an old Sentinel factory.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other teams are elsewhere. And so Rogue, the Uncanny X-Men, is debuting next month.
That's right.
And that's Rogue, Gambit, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Jubilee. And they're going to be in Louisiana. So, yeah, it's an interesting turn of events. But, yeah, if you haven't yet, go get you that number one and follow along. So before we get started here, just a reminder, we are not experts and we don't claim to be. We're just a couple of nerds nerding out. And in this episode, we're nerding out all about Pyotr Rasputin, a.k.a. Colossus.
Colossus.
We're apologizing now.
Yeah.
Like we do with every Russian character that we've covered. but yes, so created by Len Wein and Dave Cockrum with a Gil Kane and David Cockrum cover. Colossus' first appearance was giant-sized X-Men number one, May 1975. And so you may have seen this cover before, Jeff. It is quite iconic.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very iconic. It's the X-Men bursting out with the older team behind them.
Oh, wow.
68 big pages worth.
Henceforth, my goodness.
Henceforth, giant size X-Men. Shattering, senses shattering first issue. So, do you want to, let's just jump into it. Do you want to take a crack at how much this is?
$19.75,
$1. $19.75 for 68 pages?
Oh, is that a lot?
That's a lot! A usual issue will go about 20 to 25. So it's three times as many. Ish.
250.
Is that your final answer?
Sure.
Now.
Damn!
Sadly, it is.
See the page? you start throwing in X factors.
X factors.
Damn it.
$4.99.
A big fiver?
That's a lot of money in 1975.
That is.
Right? And so, but it would have gotten you far with this issue because, again, it is a big deal. So the title of this issue was Second Genesis. And the reason why it is particularly worth as much as we're about to talk about is because not only is this the first appearance of Colossus, this is also the first appearance of the new X-Men, including Storm, Nightcrawler, and Thunderbird, as well as a second full appearance of Wolverine.
Mm.
So this book is so stacked with first appearances, there's just no way it wouldn't be worth anything less than it is. And so the highest currently on Shortbox is a CGC 9.2 for $16,000. Jeff does a hard blink. It's so funny. And then on eBay, this one's going to kill you. On eBay, a CGC 9.8, which is only 0.6 above the one on Shortbox, is going for $50,000.
What the?
So it's jumping from 16 for half a point grade higher. It's almost practically near mint, right? $50,000. Whereas the lowest, you get a CGC 0.5, terrible, terrible condition, no cover, for $650. Not much different on eBay. A 0.5, also with no cover, for $450. So even without a cover, the book is still worth more than my car insurance for the, my car payment for the month, which is so incredible to think about. And then it has a fair market value of about $4,000 to $6,000, depending. And you can't just willy-nilly buy it raw. You're going to probably have to buy it through a broker or an auction of some sort. It is pretty monumental. First exposure to this character.
X-Men movie, the first.
Really?
Yeah. For sure.
You know, it's interesting because he's pretty prominent if you think about it in hindsight. He's quite prominent in the X-Men films in general.
Yeah.
Which is kind of surprising, but he plays such a, like a, he's in the background.
Like a reserved role. Yeah. Like he's prominent, but it's like he's not really doing much.
Right. Yeah. So. Okay. Interesting. And which film? Is there a particular film?
Oh, God. See, that's where I was like, do I remember? Because I just rewatched the first X-Men.
Mm.
He's not in there.
No.
He's not.
No.
So I think it'd be, is it the,
he's in two.
He's in two.
No lines. He doesn't really come in until three.
It's got to be three then. Mm. It's got to be Last Stand. Because I remember Last Stand. I talk about it all the time where just the ending of that movie is just the most insane cluster chaos of just...
Wolverine and Jean.
Yeah. Give me PTSD as a kid.
Yeah. For me, definitely trading cards.
Mm.
And then even before that, because we're going to talk about this thing at the end of the episode pretty much, but there was a cartoon pilot called Pride of the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out, I believe, in the 80s, right before the 90s. And this predated, you know, X-Men and the Animated Series. And so Colossus was a main player in that.
Yeah.
And so that was really kind of my first venture into who this character was. We'll talk about it later. So going to my handy dandy mini book. let's get a little bit of a profile on this guy. So, Colossus. I'm just going to nip it in the bud. Weight, 500 pounds. Clearly as metal, for the record. And his height is 7'5".
I feel like he'd be more. He would weigh more.
Yeah. Right? 7'5" at 500 seems kind of low, if you think about
it.
In
my opinion.
Yeah. But... recruited to join Professor Charles Xavier's team of heroic X-Men, Russian mutant Pyotr Rasputin uses his ability to turn himself into a giant sheathed in organic steel to fight threats to mutant kind as a frequent member of the X-Men. Doesn't really tell you much. It just says what his power is, which is kind of sad because there's so much more to this character. But it's pretty, pretty simple, all things considered. He is indeed a giant steel man that that joins the X-Men. And so we're going to get into his origin here in a second. And it's pretty simple, all things considered. So Pyotr Nikolaevich Peter Rasputin, Colossus. So in the grandeur that is this giant-sized X-Men, number one, you know, not only is there 68 pages of classic X-Men goodness, but the multiple origin stories tackle each character. So it's 68 pages for obvious reasons. There are five characters that they're sort of introducing into the fold. So each one got, you know, a couple of pages worth of origin story. So here's the first page. You literally open the book.
Oh, it's just...
It's like, boom. You get the OG five, and then you get all the new kids plus Banshee as well as Sunfire. And so this whole thing, this whole tagline, From the Ashes, has been in X-Men continuity since, gosh, I can't even imagine now, what year. But that's also, they're bringing it back with this, the new issues that I was just talking about. So so again, each character gets a brief but meaningful handful of pages. Colossus is the second to the last, with Nightcrawler, Wolverine, and Storm told prior, with a pepper of Sunfire there in between. And so, again, Piotr, I don't know what to call him in this episode. Peter! But Colossus's his story is quite simple in comparison. So Piotr and his family live in a small town near Lake Baikal in Siberia, Russia. And they're a farming family among many in the Ust Ordenovsky.
Nice.
Ordenovsky collective. So it's basically a farming town. There's all these houses. They're all next to each other. They're next to a lake. And so they all have their acres and acres of property. And so you see the first panel of Piotr, and he's got like a... Yeah, here it is. He's in the field.
Oh, yeah, just
doing field
hanging
work.
Hanging away.
Yeah, he's just jacked to the nines, and he's got a little, you know, what do you call it? The hay thing in...
Pitchfork?
Pitchfork. There you go. In his hands, and his dad is on the tractor. And so his father, Nikolai, they're going about their business, and Nikolai notices chaos unfolding next door, the next field over. And so a runaway tractor... exactly, is barreling through the field, and it coincidentally is heading toward Piotr's little sister Ileana, who it's kind of hilarious because she's just this child that's just like doo, 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 and she's like in the field, sitting in the field playing with her toy, and there's a tractor coming at her at like 100 miles per hour.
That's not scary.
And she's just like do, 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 playing with her toys, and they're like Ileana, and then she's just sitting there, and then it isn't until the tractor is about to collide with her, like literally kill this child, he scoops her up, and in the moment they show a panel of what you would assume is his DNA. And magical things are happening,
of course.
And then he turns into metal.
Oh my gosh.
And then the tractor then kind of just explodes upon impact, and then he's full-fledged metal and his sister is safe. And so that's when his mutation activates, is during that moment of stress. And so, yeah, like if we've learned anything about mutants, mutations seemingly activate during times of trauma and stress. And so this moment in particular is exactly that for Piotr. And so in those few moments, it goes very quickly because she's in danger. He saves her. And then the tractor explodes. And then he hears a voice in his head. And it's Professor Charles Xavier.
Yeah.
And then he is also not only in his brain, but he has come to greet Piotr in person. And he's like, hello, welcome.
You
come to join my X-Men. You know, like, and he's like, he essentially offers him a place to go to learn more about his powers. Mm-hmm. And of course, Piotr, he's in few panels flat, like you get the notion that he's very much like a family man.
Yeah.
And so he's like, but Papa, what should I do? Should I go learn about this? And then the father is actually, his parents are very supportive.
Yeah.
But they tell him, like, you should do what your heart tells you to do. And he's like, oh, you know. And he himself says, like, he doesn't want to go, but he feels like he should go.
Yeah.
So then he takes leave, and he makes the difficult decision to leave both his family and farm life to become a member of the X-Men. So that's it. That's his origin story. It's very, very simple. And it's straight to the point, and it's just a classic farm boy heads to the big city type of deal. And so when it comes to cinematic, Pyotr Rasputin, Colossus, first portrayed by Donald McKinnon in an uncredited role.
Oh, wow, not even credited.
Yeah. And then portrayed by Daniel Cudmore in X2 and X3. It was the first film where he walks through the door and then he gets like shot with the bullets, I guess.
That's right, yes.
And then we actually hear him talk in X2 and 3. This last one, however, the most recent, with mocap portrayed by Andre Tricoteau and voiceover from Stefan Kapicik. Is it Kapicik? In the Deadpool films. Yeah, it's a grand departure from the original Fox vs. Colossus. But yeah, like we said above, he's kind of more been like a subplot until these Deadpool films. Mm-hmm. And he brings, you know, levity to Wade and his quote-unquote team. But do you have a favorite version of this character?
I mean, it's got to be, at least for me in recent times, yeah. It's got to be the Deadpool version.
Me too.
Yeah.
Because he is, in all ways, accurate. I don't like saying that word because yeah. I feel like it feels
but
elitist.
After looking at these, like, I'm looking at these, like, versions of him in yes. the different movies.
Yeah.
And then seeing the comic version, I'm like, yeah.
Incredibly well, yeah, because so, you know, it kind of goes without saying, he is Russian.
Yes.
He's always supposed to have been Russian. Not that Russian people cannot adopt American accents. Obviously, like, we've kind of seen it with Yelena, for instance.
Yeah.
She's getting she's getting Americanized. And so her speech is sort of, it's very Russian, but she's learning, right? And so when it came to Daniel Cudmore, you're obviously too young to remember this, but when the films came out in theaters with Daniel Cudmore, people were like, bro, like, Colossus is Russian. How come he doesn't sound Russian? Because he's very, it's just Daniel Cudmore.
Yeah.
And he's just a tall guy. He's not like big and bulky, but you know, you see the mocap that was done for Deadpool. And he is very much a hulking giant, sort of over the top, but strangely more realistic
yes.
version of this mutant. So yeah, I think I have the same. Like, I always thought Daniel Cudmore was fine. It was good enough for the times, but once they showed the Deadpool one, I was like, oh, dude. And it made me want X-Men proper even more because yes. of the fact. So fun fact, the official X-Men movie websites noted that Colossus was one of the several mutant babies born prematurely after Chernobyl, giving him a cinematic birth date sometime after May 1986. And so given the timeline of X2, which was around 2002, mm-hmm. that would put him in the ballpark of 16 to 18, which is interesting. I was like, oh, okay. So he's supposed to be 16, 18 in X2 as we see him. So I was like, oh, I've always kind of skewed him a little older, but it tracks with the OG comics. So it's been a minute. Are you ready for a pop quiz?
I'm ready to fail.
So this one's a toughie. It's multiple choice, but it's toughie. With nearly 50 years of comic book history, mm-hmm. approximately how many appearances has Colossus had in comics? Is it A, 100 to 500, B, 501 to 1,000, C, 1,000 to 1,500, or D, more than 1,500?
That's a lot of appearances.
It is a lot, but he's been in continuity since 1975.
So he's like, wow.
Yeah.
Even if like his like just name is like mentioned type thing or like in a panel.
If he's in a panel, if he's in the background, if he's on paper.
Since 1975?
Yeah.
You know what's crazy?
What?
It's 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Almost 50 years ago.
Yeah. Ew. Next year.
Ew.
All these characters are old and wise, oh, man.
God, I'm like 1970. Yeah, that's like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, right? That's 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Gosh. I want to nix out A and B.
100 to 500 or 501 to 1,000?
Yes, if he's a very prominent character, like he's a consistent character. I feel like he is.
Yeah.
I'm going to go C.
1,000 to 1,500.
Yes.
Final.
Yes.
Okay. Jeff? You got it. So I believe the final count is somewhere in the ballpark of like 1,209.
It's a lot.
But it's a lot. Yeah, it's something around there. But then you add on like smaller cameos and stuff. Yeah, it adds up to about 13 maybe.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, good Let's job, go. Buddy. Yeah. So speaking of aesthetic, yeah, as Jeff mentioned, you know, I have a little screenshot of how he's looked throughout his cinematic tenure. And so it is very interesting to compare Colossus on screen to the comic books because, yeah, it's like, how do you, before Iron Man, yeah. obviously, it was like, how do you put a man in steel that is
a man of metal,
a metal, and then on a budget?
That doesn't require CGI, which yeah. is pretty much next to impossible.
Right, because I couldn't even tell you, aside Terminator and aside T2 specifically, I don't know that I've seen a person in metal or in that sort of format for longer than 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And so Donald McKinnon, the first one, he made the cameo. Oh, sorry. I did all my timeline all wrong. So in X2, yes, he was the first one, Donald McKinnon. So yeah, he wasn't. It looks like a little bit more like they had essentially ripped off his skin and he was just muscle that turned into steel. Oh. Like, look at this screenshot. Like, you can see all the fibers in his muscle, which is like, oh, I don't know that.
I like that.
Yeah, it's a little too much.
Ugh.
Yeah. It's looking at it closer. It's like, ugh. And then in X-Men Last Stand with Daniel Cudmore is when they kind of crafted him a bit more metallic. He still has remnants of like fibrous skin grafts, which is again a little too much because I get what they're trying to do with the lines that Colossus had in the comics. But it isn't until X-Men 3 with Days of Future Past, not 3, what am I saying, 4, that he looked a little closer. But you know, I don't remember how much he was in, because all I remember from Last Stand is that they ripped him literally in half. Those Sentinels, which is so insane to me. But yeah, it isn't until Deadpool 1 that we really, I think, landed the solid look down to the angular hair that he has. But yeah, you know, it's just, he's like an absolute unit of just metal, whereas the other ones are like, oh, he's a Metallica guy. I don't know. It just resonates a bit different.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's consistent with his look in the comics. And though his uniforms have just not really hit it yet, like even in Deadpool, obviously the closest one, but it's still a little subdued. So maybe we'll see him in a little bit something more if he's even in this film. I would assume he's in the third one, right?
We'll see.
But yeah, you know, Colossus typically wears team colors, especially red and sometimes yellow. He's gone across the board and worn a few other colors, including purple, which we'll talk about shortly. But yeah, I agree. I like the Deadpool version the best. So for powers and paraphernalia, according to Marvel.com, Colossus can, quote unquote, convert the tissue of his entire body into an organic steel-like substance analogous to osmium, and to carbon steel that grants him superhuman strength, class 100, and a high degree of imperviousness to injury. His armored form can withstand ballistic penetration, including that of a 110-millimeter howitzer shell. This is why I kept it in, because I was like, I was just going to do the usual, but I was like, the way they explain it is so actually insane in scientific terms. It's impressive. He can survive a collision with a loaded 1-ton flatbed truck at 100 miles per hour or an explosion of 450 pounds of TNT. He can survive temporal extremes from 70 degrees Fahrenheit above absolute zero which is negative 390 degrees Fahrenheit, to approximately 9,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And then Colossus's armored form cannot rust under normal Earth conditions. And yet, the Sentinels in Days of Future Past
ripped
him apart.
They're like, yeah, you're dead.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, what? So like to compare those two things, those factors immediately, I'm just like, either those Sentinels were truly so deadly and so powerful, or they just really nerfed his powers and just made him a guy that had a surface level that was metal, but not...
Well, I mean, after watching X-Men 97, the anime series, it's like, oh, the Sentinels were made to... It doesn't matter what powers you have.
Yeah.
They can deter it.
They can deter, yeah. it truly makes them the best.
But also, look, I will say, Days of Future Past, those Sentinels... I remember when I first saw that movie in theaters, and I saw those Sentinels, and that opening sequence.
Yeah.
I was like... These guys are scary. I was like, what kind of movie is this?
We should talk about the Sentinels.
And then I see Halle Berry, and I'm like, is she going to die? Is she going to die?
And she didn't, thankfully.
I mean, Iceman died, and I was like, oh my God.
I know. They pretty much all died. Yeah. It was a death trap. So the interesting thing about Colossus is that when he's rendered unconscious... he reverts back to human form. Mm. So if he's hurt or damaged, like truly hurt, he will revert back to human form, which is unfortunate for him.
Yeah, so it's like, damn, just don't get knocked out.
Yes, exactly. As long as he's not knocked out, he's fine. And so the metal mimicry is what they call it in the comics, and it enables him with superhuman strength, stamina, durability, as well as peak human speed and energy projection. He's also an expert combatant and farmer. He's multilingual and he dabbles in painting, which he painted a lot of Psylocke portraits back in the day.
Ooh.
Betsy Braddock, not the other one, but yeah. ironically enough, Colossus's weaknesses include vulnerability to vibranium and adamantium.
That's crazy.
Showing adverse effects when attacked with either. And he also can't cry when he's metal.
Loser! can't show emotion.
No, that's the thing, is that in comics, I'm pretty certain that this happened, is that when he feels like he's going to get emotional, because he's a soft boy.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. He was like, Papa, I don't know if I should go to see, you know what I mean? Like, he's a soft boy.
Deadpool, so, look inside yourself.
Exactly. So he quite literally goes cold and turns into metal so that he doesn't cry.
But he can throw up.
But he can throw up.
He can vomit.
That is also
Deadpool.
True.
Deadpool. Be the better man. Think of the choice. Bop. Oh, God.
Oh. He's so fun. I love him in Deadpool so much.
So is there an issue or a time where he fights the Black Panther or Wolverine?
You know, I couldn't tell you off the bat with Black Panther. I feel like probably not.
Yeah,
they don't
want
to put him in that situation.
Yeah, but it's like, how often is he going to come into contact with vibranium, in my opinion?
Yeah, well, Omega Red. We've not talked about Omega Red. Vibranium there. But yeah, Wolverine, they've always thankfully been...
On the same side?
Jumping ahead a bit. But yeah, they're pretty much on the same side quite often. And I also feel like they're just trying to avoid that. But I don't put it past him to have been stabbed by Wolverine at least a few times.
Just look here, bub.
That's pretty good,
you Russian
Jeff.
Bub.
Bub.
You Soviet bub.
Yeah.
Look here.
Sorry. Oh, no. All good. So yeah, they don't... I don't think they put them at odds that often. And if they do... You know what? I bet you is during the periods when Wolverine didn't even have the adamantium. You know what I mean? Like, he was just bone clawed. So the timing and the circumstance goes in his favor. And so while we don't necessarily see the full breadth of his powers in the films, we very much see notes of his near invulnerability. The way he's able to take on heavy hitting adversaries in combat, especially in Deadpool. So it's interesting because in film, obviously, and again, to your point, he's never like the forefront character. So he's always kind of been the vehicle of like big bad CGI fight, yeah. Like always. And they even said it in
big
Deadpool.
CGI fight coming right up.
Deadpool 2. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's interesting that he's always been kind of placed in that way. So, before we get started with family, friends, and affiliations, I wanted to present a fun fact. And so it's been established that Colossus and his family are direct descendants of real-life Russian mystic and faith healer Grigori Rasputin and a fictional Romani woman named Elena. So they have this heritage, this bloodline that goes all the way back to actual Russian history, which is a nice nod to the... to the heritage, really. But as for his immediate family, Nikolai and Alexandra Rasputin are his parents. Not a tremendous amount to say there. So, like I showed you that panel, Jeff, and in his first appearance. And so, as a whole, the Rasputin family, they were just very canonically close-knit, very homegrown and closely tied. His parents, however, were killed when the Russian government...
I mean, yeah.
I know. The Russian government wanted to obtain Ilyana for her mutant potential. And so they essentially farmed her. They were caught in the crossfires. They were meant to die regardless because they didn't want them to get in the way. And, you know, this among other familial, I'm putting a lot of challenging words for myself in this one. Losses takes its toll on Colossus over time, which we'll get to very shortly.
What X-Men doesn't have?
They all have trauma.
Parental trauma.
All trauma. Every single one of them has trauma.
You guys have gone a journey on me ever since X-Men 97 came out.
The last four that we've even talked about. Rogue. Dad. She had dad. And then she had like a drunken aunt, and then Mystique and Destiny were her parents.
The parents.
Beast, they got brainwashed after he left.
Yes.
They have no recollection of that he's even a mutant.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jubilee, parents fell off a cliff.
Yep.
They were killed for the banking. Remy, his parents didn't even want him. They gave him up for adoption because they thought he was ugly. Jeff's laughing so hard. He's like,
dude, yeah, this is all messed up.
It's all messed up. And again, we haven't even hit the Summers family.
I know. Ooh.
Like,
guys, I have been like bottling. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
All this like talk of X-Men since the first episode of 97.
Are you living? Are you like,
well, I'm
so
just like
different.
I'm starting to realize now because obviously I mean, not to go on a side tangent, but yeah, MCU was mostly Avenger based.
Yes.
And now we're getting into X-Men. And then as X-Men 97 went on and we do these different X-Men episodes,
yeah.
I'm realizing like this is toxic.
It's so toxic. It's kind of wild though, right? Because you do think about like how even in the beginning when we were talking about like the beginning of this show in general, like we talked about Tony Stark, and so he's an alcoholic, but he's got his, you know, whatever, he's fine. Then we got into Spider-Man, who seemed to be the most tragic of the bunch. Cap,
yes.
Nat, Hawkeye, like we've talked about all these characters and they all have their own tragedies, but when we get to the X-Men, it's like they all have these common threads of trauma and toxicity.
It's so bad.
It's very dark and very like it you just wouldn't, if you saw a picture of the X-Men, like that poster of the animated series, you're like, oh, this looks fun.
Yeah.
No.
Trauma.
Which is the polar opposite of...
Remember those abandonment issues you had growing up?
Yeah.
Watch this show, because they all go through the same thing.
Exactly. They're all abandoned or they lose their parents, their family members, and it all plays into something. And so, unfortunately, that is very true with Colossus. And so, yes, the parents have perished because of them simply being mutants. So that seems to be, again, like a pain point of trauma that, again, another thread that goes, it's a through line through all of these characters, is that they're all reminded that just because of the way that they were born and the manifestation of a mutation in their genetic DNA has led to something bad. And so in Colossus's, one of Colossus's reasons is that because he's a mutant, his parents were killed. Same with his little sister, you know? And so the family trauma, this is where it starts. It's not even ending yet. But safe to say that Nikolai and Alexandra do not have on-screen counterparts whatsoever. Because in the films, as we'll go about, we don't get to see any of these family members interact with Colossus, let alone in general. So we haven't seen a proper origin story yet, if we ever will.
Yeah.
But there is somebody who makes an on-screen appearance, even though they don't interact, and that's Ilyana Rasputin, a.k.a. Magic. So this is Pyotr's very popular baby sister. And as I mentioned, she's the child that almost got run over by a runaway tractor.
Oh, my God.
And so she is a character, however, who could easily have her own standalone episode once you watch The New Mutants. So we're not going to get too deep into her. But yeah, as a child, after she had not perished at the hands of a tractor, Ilyana contracted what was known as the Legacy Virus. And so we've mentioned this in a few episodes, but it's essentially a deadly virus that only infected mutants. And so Beast was able to create a cure, like further down the line, but it required a mutant sacrifice to create the antibodies.
Yeah.
So after Ilyana succumbed to the virus, Colossus then stepped up and he volunteered to sacrifice himself in order to find the cure for the greater good. So that, and I remember when that came out because I bought it and it was like kind of like one of my first real touch points of like, I've gotten to know this character and now they're about to die. Like it had never, I'd never really had that as a kid until Colossus's death.
Uh-huh.
So I remember reading this issue and I was like, so he's dead? He's like dead? And he like gave himself up. And that resonates very interestingly to his origin story in that he was like, I don't want to, but I'm going to do it for the greater good. And so this really crafts the character signature that is Colossus. He doesn't always do what he wants to, but he always does what he thinks he should, which is very interesting of him. And it plays into one of his other relationships that we'll talk about soon. But so yeah, he did the thing for the cure. He died. They were able to make this cure. And then they later then kind of scrubbed it as they always do. They took away the trauma. And this is something that I think James Gunn kind of made commentary about in his own way.
Yeah.
That why would he ever bring Yondu back? Because it diminishes the death. Well, in continuity for comics, writers seem to not give a crap. They step all over each other. And so even though one writer wrote him that he died, another writer came in. It was probably one of those, we need Colossus back. It was somebody write up a story.
It'd be so good if he was here.
He needs to be back. We need him. And so he was actually, it was written that he was actually abducted by an alien named Ord.
Okay.
And then he later rejoined the team again.
Of course.
Yeah, they just brought him back because they needed him for whatever reason. And so back to Ilyana, however. So she's very complicated. There's this whole thing with her being in limbo. It crosses over into multiple large arcs. But she becomes, she takes on this alias called Dark Child. But she's more prominently known as Magic. And so we'll talk about her eventually. I mean, yeah, once you watch the film, I would love to talk about her. She was actually one of my favorite characters growing up too. And so in Cinematic Universe, she is portrayed by Anya Taylor-Joy in 2020's The New Mutants, directed by Josh Boone. And so this was kind of a dream casting. Like it was one of those instances where it's like, damn, why did it have to be that movie?
Yeah.
I liked it.
Uh-huh.
It is imperfect, but I liked it. I thought it's better than a few of the other films that have come out in general. But it really hit a rough road because it came out like in the midst of lockdown.
Yeah.
You know? And I think I said this before, but I went to go watch it when it had come out in theaters because I think it was like right after my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess we're one month. Yeah, a month. No, I don't remember how. I don't know. I don't know the timing, but I went to watch it at a drive-in because that was the only way we could watch the movie. So I went to this drive-in to watch it, and Anya Taylor-Joy is so good because she's just bitchy enough to carry the character. Because as an adult, Ileana is no longer this very sweet, like, Piotr.
Yeah.
You know, she's not the cute little sister anymore. She's more of like, I've been to limbo.
Yeah.
I have powers. I don't give a damn. And Anya Taylor-Joy is so good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And she really nailed it. She even looks like her. She looks exactly like the comic book version entirely.
Love that.
Yeah, I love it, love it, love it. And so even as a lead, however, in The New Mutants, she only has about 7 minutes of total on-screen time.
That's crazy.
She's a lead character in that film.
Mm.
And she only has 7 minutes. I don't understand how that happened. But she's fantastic. And so, although the cinematic version of Ileana threads into the greater Foxverse, the siblings never had a chance to directly connect in live action, and it's a damn shame. So, she's clearly not coming back, at least at this point, into the MCU. Neither Ileana nor Anya Taylor-Joy, because Anya Taylor-Joy was also supposedly cast as Silver Surfer for Fantastic Four, but that fell through the cracks.
Pain.
And then Julia Garner got it. So I hope that leaves it open. I don't know if she'd do it, but I would love to see her as Magic come back,
mm-hmm,
and hopefully get some Colossus family time somewhere.
Ugh, we'll see.
She's a great character. I love her. Next on the list, and reminder that this is friends, family, and affiliations. Eric Lenscher.
Who?
Magneto! So, although Magnus has been a lifelong gray area for many X-Men, he was once a very close ally of Colossus's. So, after Piotr's, you know, family and personal trauma, Colossus left the X-Men to join Magneto's acolytes. Speaking of acolytes.
Nice.
And it was because, you know, like, this is, you have to remember, this is in the midst of the new wave of X-Men versus Magneto in the mid-90s. So this is during the events of X-Men, the animated series, the hype of like, ooh, people are really, they're responding to this good versus semi-good.
Yeah.
Not necessarily bad gray area. And so Colossus was one of the notable instances where Magneto, you know how Magneto was always like, do you know if you're on the right side? Like, he's constantly questioning Professor X's like teachings, right?
What a guy.
Yeah. And so Magneto successfully coerced Piotr to reevaluate his place with the X-Men. And Piotr was like, you actually might be right. Maybe we are supposed to be in the superior standing. We're gifted. We should accept it. We should have a place,
yeah,
in society above Homo superior or Homo sapiens as Homo superior. And despite the fact Colossus not only aided the X-Men in overthrowing the acolytes, in battle on Avalon. So Avalon is another one of Magneto's many territories. And so he helped them, come in. They go to battle, and in the squabble, Magnus was left in a vegetative state. So, of all people, Colossus, once again, not necessarily doing what he wants to, but doing what he should,
yeah,
then takes Magnus, brings him to safety, and he takes care of him while he's comatose.
Whoa.
And this is like a point in time where we see Magnus with like a full-on beard. Yeah, it's kind of nuts. But yeah, Colossus had been among all these, I don't want to say villains, super villains, but among Magneto and his gray characters.
Yeah.
He's with all these villains that usually were against the X-Men, but he was there in hopes that he could sway them into doing better.
Mm-hmm.
Just, again, soft boy. He's a very soft boy. He thinks he can make the change, but he ended up wearing the same colors that put him on the opposition against his own teammates. So, yeah. And so, of course, Eric Lenscher, Magneto, portrayed primarily by Sir Ian McKellen as well as Michael Fassbender. We covered Magneto in episode 61. This was all before X-Men 97 came out. So, unfortunately, it doesn't include all that goodness used loosely. But if you want to hear about him, we did cover all the things about his origin. And then these two never cross over in the films at all. And that might be for the good because Magneto
that is true.
And Metal.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, no Metal, no problem. We're not gonna get too deep into that at all. But there is one more that is on his friends and family side, and that's Eloise Ellie Fimster, aka Negasonic Teenage Warhead. She's a bit different in the comics, more interwoven into some of the darker storylines, and she has some powers that we never see her have in Deadpool. Like in Deadpool, she's just like, I blow up.
She's like just powerful as hell.
Yeah. in the book, she's kind of got some, I think she has telepathic prowess in addition. And yeah, she's very interesting. She looks quite different too. Whereas in the cinematic universe, she's portrayed by Brianna Hildebrand in both Deadpool 1 and 2, and she's clearly coming back for 3. And she is more or less his pupil in the films, and she's an all-around badass. So I really enjoy their dynamic because he's like trying to, again, we see it again, soft boy, big brother type, trying to take care of her as she's training for the X-Men. And she just kind of side-eyes him, but she does follow his training. So she'll make a good X-Men, if only for him. And so before we get into our love interests, I got a pop quiz for you, bud. You ready?
Will I go 2 for 2?
Will you go 2 for 2? This is a multiple choice again. So we'll see how you do. So, having first appeared in Uncanny X-Men number 100, which of the following is an actual tag team move of Colossus and any given ally? Is it Up and Atom? Okay. Is it Fastball Special? Is it Heavy Metal Rock and Roll? Or is it Rock, Paper, Scissors?
And he says this.
Does
he say it like out? Does he exclaim it as he's like, open that them?
Yes. One of them do. It's either him or the other person says these words. As they're about to do it. Up and at them.
Up and at them.
Fastball Special.
Here's the Fastball Special.
Heavy Metal Rock and Roll.
Here comes the Heavy Metal Rock and Roll. That one feels too long.
Or Rock, Paper, and Scissors. Rock, Paper, Scissors.
You've activated Rock, Paper, Scissors. I feel like C is too long. It's like, you're like, that's
Heavy
just,
Metal Rock and Roll.
C, no. I don't know why I like Up and Atom. Like, that seems like less cheesy.
Yeah.
Out of like the other three remaining.
Okay.
Up and Atom. Second was B.
B was Fastball Special.
Here's the Fastball Special. The Fastball. This is like my Red Guardian impression. It's like the same.
Fastball Special. Up and
Here
Atom.
Comes the Fastball Special.
Rock, Paper, Scissors.
That one sounds like threatening. Like it's like it's like you've acted like you just asked for rock paper scissors.
it's pretty funny.
Oh gosh, but I feel like Fastball Special is like a sleeper choice.
Yeah,
it's like, but was there baseball in Russia growing up? You have to like get
that's
deep
a good point.
But you got to get deep. Up, like my choices are.
I have an answer for you though. Baseball was officially introduced in 1987 when the USSR baseball, softball, and Russian Lapta Federation was established.
Late 80s, right?
Yes.
He arrived in the 70s, mid 70s, first appearance?
Yeah, 75.
So he was like 12 years old?
Yeah.
So, but he could be using the Fastball Special as a kid, you know?
So good. Your deductions are amazing. That's great.
Oh, see, that changes everything.
So are you going
Because Fastball Special was probably going to be third on my list.
Interesting.
And then Rock, Paper, Scissors is so catchy, mm-hmm. but it's also very like old school yeah. phrasing where I'm like, yeah, that could be. So that's number two.
And if it helps to know any, Uncanny X-Men number 100, which this originated from, came out in 1976.
That changes a lot.
Yeah. Timeline is everything.
Fastball Special Fastball Special is out of there. So Rock Paper Scissors is number two. Mm. And Up and Atom is number one for me.
Up and Atom.
Yeah. Because it's quick. He doesn't talk too much. Mm. Kind of he does, but like Rock Paper Scissors sounds so... Imagine saying that in the like before you like activate that power move, you've just act the rock paper scissors. Like what?
That's so crazy. That's funny.
He's like, oh, up and at them. A. Okay, I'm gonna go A.
A.
Yeah, up and at them.
All right, I'm gonna show your answer on screen.
Oh no!
Are you ready?
Oh no! I can't. Fastball Special?
It's so iconic, they made a statue of it. Fastball Special. So,
I digress.
It is interesting that you mentioned the date. So, it's kind of like Russia didn't even have baseball yet. Yeah,
how do you?
It was an American pastime.
Yeah.
However, it's quite literally, they depicted it in. I want to say it was Last Stand. Was it Last Stand? I think it's when they're in the danger room. Yes, it's when they're in the danger room. And he goes up to Colossus. Wolverine goes up to Colossus and he goes, hey, throw me or something. He says, like, throw me.
Mm.
In the comics, he quite literally does the same with Piotr. And he's like, big guy. Fastball Special. It's Wolverine.
Hey, big guy.
Yeah. And so he is... done this Fastball Special with anybody who asks, but Wolverine is fun sized in the comics. You have to remember he's 5'3" in the comic books. Fair. He's shorter than I am, technically.
Yeah. He's a small fella.
He's a small guy. So Colossus is able to throw him with utter ease. But yeah, it's a thing. And multiple characters have done this action move. Ant-Man, for instance, has kind of done his own version of it with Hawkeye. Like, you know, they all have this spec. It's so it is Fastball Special. I want to kind of give it to you because you did say it at first and then you brought in some amazing logic.
That's how I think. It's based fantastic. On logic.
But yeah, no, it's very good. It's a very good point. Maybe somebody should rewrite that and be like,
baseball wasn't even
it wasn't
part
in
of the
Russia until 1987. We're just like Red Guardian and Yelena forever.
I know. Pretty much.
Did I mention, by the way, Anya Taylor-Joy in New Mutants, Russian. So she has the accent in the film.
It's a pretty good accent, too.
It's pretty solid. It sounds like you're listening to Yelena.
Nice.
And she's so awful.
She's so good.
She's so good. Yeah, you got to watch it. So, love interest. So first on this list, there is only a list of two, so we're not going to get into it too much. Although I will say, Piotr has had his fair share of crushes and flings and such. And I will even go as far to say that Rogue was crushing on him for a minute too.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't super duper serious, but there is this infamous panel where Rogue is looking at him. I think he's in his flesh form. And she's just like, you are
okay, Yoda.
Something else.
Something else I see.
It's pretty funny. But the two main love interests that Colossus has had in the comics, the first one is Zashi. So during the events of Secret Wars, the heroes and villains alike were transported into Battle World. I think we talked a bit about this in our Hulk episode. And so they were meant to satisfy the Beyonder's interests in just watching chaos unfold.
Mm-hmm.
And so Colossus is there with several other X-Men, Avengers, what have you. And he's hurt in the midst of one of these many, many battles because it's just like Hunger Games all day. And all they do is fight each other. It's all they do. And so he gets hurt. And Zashi is a healer of this battle world terrain. And so she doesn't speak a lick of English at all. She like speaks in some alien form. And so in the panels, you just see squiggly lines. And so they're like, oh, you're a healer, right? It's like, all of them do it. Johnny Storm even is like, I have no idea what you just said, but I'm going to take that's a good thing. And so he's hurt. He's then treated by Zashi. And up until this very moment, he had been in and out of a relationship with Kitty Pryde. So he's really lovesick. He's like pining for like, oh, I wish I was back on the earth and with Kitty. You know, like he was just wishing to go home. And so instead, after he gets hurt, he like gets infatuated with Zashi. Mm-hmm. And then he's like suddenly like, oh, maybe it's not so bad being on Battle World. It's like, you freak! So he, after she heals him, he's like absolutely smitten with her and she's playing the field, which is also kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So Johnny Storm being Johnny Storm, when you haven't even talked about him yet, but he's an absolute playboy in the comics and he's very much the blonde hair, blue eyed, super adorable, mm-hmm. very charismatic, very much like how Chris Evans portrayed him.
Mm.
He's that kid. And so she was flying off with Johnny Storm. They were having their moments. And then the minute Colossus comes in, it's like it's a triangle. And he suddenly has forgotten about Kitty. It's so messed up.
That is.
Yeah. And so, spoiler alert, it went absolutely nowhere after the event. So after Secret Wars ended, he just went back to Earth. And then he, oh, Kitty, my love. And, you know, tried to get back with her. And so there is no on-screen counterpart. We don't even know how far they're going to go with Secret Wars. Maybe mm-hmm. we will see her, but who knows? As for Kitty herself, she is the one and only last on this list. So Catherine Kitty Pryde, aka Shadow Cat. So these two have a very, very long history, pretty much since day one, if you will. And so Kitty had a crush on him as early as 13 years old, which... this is where the age difference part comes, gets a little problematic because he, again, doing the math of the whole Chernobyl thing, right? So we're marking him around 16 to 18.
It's gross.
And so, yeah, exactly. So if you think back on it, if Kitty's 13 and they're projecting Colossus... Jeff's making vomit faces. If they're putting Colossus at 16, 17, he's not quite... Yeah, you know where I'm going with this. So to say they've had a messy history would be a severe understatement based on that, the Zashi thing alone. You know, Kitty being present and sometimes the cause of Colossus's battle wounds against many adversaries also played into it, some of which significantly altered his ability to remain or change back into steel form. So it's just not great. It doesn't work for these two. And as with many of the iconic ex-couples, their relationship went through its dramatic ups and downs since 1980. And the two were due to tie the knot in 2017. And so we mentioned this both in our Rogue and our Gambit episodes,
mm-hmm.
that despite having proposed to Colossus herself, Kitty left him at the altar.
Jeez, man.
Noting that although they loved one another, their history was far too messy for a healthy marriage. And so the scenario is everybody's there. Everybody's dressed in their Sunday best. The setup is beautiful. Everything's ready. Colossus is waiting at the altar for her. She comes up and she's like, I can't do this. And she phases into the ground. She disappears. years, and that's funny. And then that's the
definition of ghosting.
She is the queen of ghosting, and all that's left is her veil. And then Kurt, I believe Kurt was supposed to be the priest, so he's like looking around like.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And so, of course, you know, during that time, like, everybody's like, well, enjoy the ceremony. So everything's paid for. So everybody's enjoying the reception already. And that's when Ororo starts to have a talk with Remy and is like, you know, this is a wonderful opportunity that, you know, if you love someone that you... And then he literally looks at her across the room. He goes up to her. He's like, I have something to ask you. And she's like, what is it? And he gets on the knee. And she's like, this is crazy.
Wow.
And then they get, immediately she says yes. They literally get married.
Wow.
Yeah, into it. So, yeah, even though they had a tumultuous backstory, they still managed to survive. But Gideon Colossus didn't happen. So, in cinematic verse, so Kitty, she's only known as Kitty Pryde. They've not ever listed her as Catherine, so who knows if that's her name. But Kitty Pryde, first portrayed by Sumella Kay in X-Men. So do you remember this cameo? It's very much like the Donald McKinnon one, where the agents are coming in, they're infiltrating the mansion. And Kitty is actually one of the random characters that, if you know, you know. She's in bed, and the guy points a gun at her head, and then she, like, closes her eyes and phases into the floor.
Bed? Okay.
Yeah, that's her. That's Sumella Kay. And then Katie Stewart in X2. This one, I don't know if you remember, but Logan came, or Scott came to talk to Professor X or somebody. Mm-hmm. And she was about to walk out of the classroom. She forgot something, picked it up, and then phased through the door. That was that girl. So that's Katie Stewart. So it isn't until X3 and 4 that we actually saw Elliot Page portray Kitty. And so these two in X3 and 4 actually had quite a bit of on-screen time. But they were just... teammates. They were never introduced to be interacting one way or another because of the overlap with Kitty's relationship with Bobby Drake, Iceman.
Yeah.
So they never got a chance to actually go canonical with it, which is, it would have been fine. But yeah, considering they were on screen together so much, it's like, oh, shucks. But they had to have that love triangle one way or another with Rogue. So I get it. But yeah, they otherwise were both teachers at the Xavier Institute at the end of all the films, at least in the Foxverse. And so we'll see if we see Kitty moving forward. And so beyond all this, Colossus was once... oh my word. Speaking of love triangles, there's this very interesting issue. I don't want to talk about it much at all, but I will say this guy, dude. He... There's this issue where he's in the Savage Land and he beats down a T-Rex. How dare you? And then there are two women there that are so thankful for the rescue that they start tugging at him and they're like, oh, we want to show you how thankful we are. And he's like, And he ends up fathering a child with one of them.
That's freaking insane.
And again, we're not going to talk about it, but the son's name is Peter. Piotr. So he has a son floating around in the ether. So notable adversaries. So again, we've said this many, many times. Like all superheroes, many well-known adversaries come by proxy, though there are a few in particular that we can discuss when it comes to Colossus and the films. So Mikhail Rasputin. There's no coincidence that this dude has the same last name because it's Colossus's older brother. Mm-hmm. So this is where we were talking about more family trauma.
Love that.
It's because his big brother, little brother, but I don't remember. His older brother is a bad guy. And so
they always are.
Yeah. So he was a Soviet cosmonaut. thought to have perished during a mission explosion. And so just like our boy Red Guardian, his death was falsified by the government. Almost identical, by the way. They almost have the same exact thing because Alexei was a pilot for the Russian government. They blew up his plane. Mm-hmm. And so with Mikhail, he was an astronaut, and they blew up his spaceship. And so the government falsified the death, and then Mikhail himself, was sent to another dimension where he became the messiah of this alternate planet, universe, environment thing. And then he also married into royalty. So he was sort of like cultivated to be this, I'm so powerful, I have this prominence in the world type of deal. Mm-hmm. And you know, he has this collision with the X-Men. Of course, this is when he comes back into contact with his brother, and things just do not go well. It just goes completely askew, completely awry. And so Mikhail is notably a supervillain with his own complex backstory. And he even suffered traumatic PTSD, which often results in actions and unsavory consequences for the X-Men and their periphery. So there are moments of like something happens and then Mikhail reacts. He's very reactive as a character. Okay. And so he has no on-screen counterpart. I don't think we'll see him. Maybe if we do, it's just an homage or something. But he seems very complicado. So who knows?
They all do.
Right? And so as for the films, you know, thinking about other adversaries that could align with Colossus, these next two actually stem from the films. So we're just going to talk about these Deadpool adversaries. The first one being Christina, aka Angel Dust. Huh. So while these two do not have any overlap in the comics, Angel Dust was a runaway mutant who became part of the Morlocks. And so we talked about the Morlocks a bit in our Gambit episode. And in Christina's case, she was terrified that her family wouldn't accept her, but they thankfully did. After a successful Sentinel base operation that happened, and she helped save the day. It was after the events of M-Day, however, Angel Dust was rendered depowered. So I just wanted to make note of that in particular, because M-Day, of course, is the day that Wanda Maximoff spoke those three catastrophic words into the atmosphere, where she said, no more mutants.
You think they do it? That's a side tangent, but
that would be wild. And we mentioned this in our Scarlet Witch episode, I think. Like, can you imagine if they went there?
They're giving her a movie too. They're giving her a solo movie.
I mean,
that's what I've heard in rumors.
Right,
no, but I believe it.
I believe that.
And she
too.
Still wants to do.
Yeah, she wants to do it till.
What's that run called?
House of M.
The House of M. Yeah. She wants to do that.
Exactly right. So that's what. This is what kicked it off. So Christina is actually a byproduct of that thing. So she was one of the few mutants who lost her powers when Scarlet Witch did that, and she was depowered, just done.
Wow.
No more. And so Christine, Angel Dust in the cinematic universe. I'll be honest, I forgot this happened. I forgot she was her, but she
really?
Was portrayed by Gina Carano.
Yeah.
In 2016's Deadpool. I completely forgot, but it is unfortunate. I will say unfortunate, because I loved that.
It was funny.
It was funny.
It was a good dynamic for
it
sure.
It was great. I was like, who is this chick? She's so crazy, because I'm not a wrestling person. I had no idea who she was. And so, yeah, I completely forgot that Gina Carano played this character and that she was a canonical character on top of it. But yeah, it was a pretty funny character for what they did with her. And she definitely gave Colossus a run for his money.
I agree.
It was a good way to, was it at the beginning? No, it was
at the end.
It was at the end, yeah.
It's at the end.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
I will say, Lizzie Olsen saying the words "no more mutants."
I mean,
would
can
feed
you imagine?
Families.
Could you imagine?
Would feed families.
She's like, no more mutants.
How I imagine the ending of that solo movie would end.
Yeah.
But then
with that,
it'd be a push zoom on her of her face into a close up.
Yeah.
Her eyes open up.
Yeah.
And she says it.
Yeah.
And that's how it ends, and that goes into her sequel.
Interesting, because in the comics, it's not unsimilar in that they go from all whatever all, everything that's happening to a horizontal panel, and it's her profile, but it's just this part, just her nose to her chin, and then it just says
no more mutants. Yeah. I feel like
So it would be very similar. And it would Lizzie's eyes are very much a character of its own.
Yeah.
So I could see her. I could literally see her like showing it in her eyes, like the words and the emphasis of it.
It would feed families. Crazy. I think so.
It would cure all facial acne.
It would. Humanity would be at peace.
Yeah.
No more political parties.
Oh my gosh.
Everybody would be united as a nation.
Amazing.
Clean water everywhere.
You know what I see after that though? After she says those words, I would see like the screen just goes black, but then it comes back with like choral music, like it's just all these mutants just losing their powers. Like you just see like a visual of what that would look like.
Is it that they lose their powers?
Depowered, so they just
return to human form.
Yeah, they're just normal people.
Got it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it would be like the ending of
people falling out of the sky.
It'd be like the snap.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah,
there it is, Marvel. You're welcome.
Yeah, right. Oh my gosh. So next on the list, Kane Marco, aka Juggernaut. Colossus and Juggernaut have had multiple run-ins and crossovers in continuity. However, it's more of the deity behind Juggernaut that really links them. So these guys are obviously like two peas in a pod. They're both big. They're both hulky. They can both take a lot of battle damage. So they often get put together because it just makes sense. Like, oh, yeah, let's have these two squabble because who else are in the they can handle each other. So in the comics, however, Juggernaut, so there is its own complex little origin story of how he even got his powers to begin with. He wasn't just like a big hulky guy that, oh, one day mutant manifestation made him big. There's more to it. And so there is this deity called Sidorak, and it's a mystical entity that powers Juggernaut through this artifact known as the Crimson Gem of Sidorak. So, Colossus in the comics bargains with Sidorak in a bid to combat against Juggernaut's new powerful persona at the time, Kurth. It says a curse, but Kith like. And so Kurth, so Colossus wanted to fight to be able to take on battling him. So he tells Sidorak, like, let me become the Juggernaut so I can battle him and defeat him. And so Colossus became the Juggernaut at one point during the comic run, which was so interesting because it was just as you imagine him, Colossus, but he had the dome on top of his head. So he looks like Colossus, but he has the Juggernaut head on.
Yeah.
Which is kind of goofy, but funny at the same time. Yeah. And so Colossus remained Juggernaut for quite a while, but it became increasingly dangerous because Sidorak, when it's affecting his persona, it starts to influence that person. It starts to take over that person that is the vessel, if you will. And so it psychologically put Colossus against Ileana at one point. And so, of course, again, Colossus is such a family man that this is all just not good news for him. So there's this whole other story that goes along with this, but the gem itself is ultimately destroyed, and then Kane then gains the bands of Sidorak. So although he was no longer able to become Juggernaut with the gem, he then gets the bands, which enable him with the same power originally granted to him to be able to become Juggernaut, but none of Sidorak's influence was present anymore. So that's now why he's powered. He's like, okay, he's the power of Sidorak, but he's no longer possessed by Sidorak, if you will. And so none of that is carried over into the cinematic universe because we do meet Kane Marco, Juggernaut, portrayed by Vinnie Jones in X-Men The Last Stand. And then, did you know this? Because I didn't know this. Ryan Reynolds in Deadpool 2 played Juggernaut.
I feel like I read it at some point, but it was kind of like, I don't know.
I had no idea. So he did the voice and the mocap for it. For Juggernaut.
So he just like deepened his voice.
Yeah. And then of course, after I realized this, I was like, what? And I
rewatched it.
I put the fight scene on and I was like, oh my God, it is right. You can hear it. Like, not, it's not obvious, but if you know Ryan Reynolds' voice,
yeah,
you can hear the tone
it's
of it.
It's so funny.
It's so funny. I was like, oh my God, it's so hilarious. I love that he did that. Although we discussed Kane Marco in episode 52 with, I think that was Professor X, we didn't discuss the full nature of Juggernaut because it wasn't addressed in the films, which is why I just mentioned it. But he could have his own episode further down the line. And while, you know, they don't meet in X-Men The Last Stand, the two go toe-to-toe in Deadpool 2, like I just mentioned. And yeah, it was absolutely bonkers. I just posted it, I think, on social the other day. Mm. Just because it is the big CG fight that you really want. And
big CGI fight coming up.
Coming up. So good. And yeah, I will say, like, up front, like, the Ryan Reynolds version is my favorite Juggernaut. Like, Vinny Jones is cool and all. Do you remember the line, right? You remember the line. What's the line, Jeff? Do you know the line?
Oh.
The Juggernaut line?
Oh, no.
Come on. You don't know it? And he's up against Kitty Pryde. And it's after he was running through the walls.
Right?
Yeah. And he's like, don't you know who I am?
Yeah.
And then
I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. Keeping that in.
Yeah, you keep that in. Yeah. So again, Vinnie Jones, amazing, great. I like the CGI, I gotta say.
Yeah. Fair.
So in other versions and in other media, video games, so Colossus appears in over 20, that's 20 video games, starting as far back as 1989. And as recent as 2019, as a playable character or NPC, though, when I was writing these notes, I was like, no, he's in Marvel Snap too, which was released in 2022. So he's been in games up to now. He's probably been in Fortnite. He's probably been in other things that haven't been quite documented yet. So even though we didn't get a lot of him in the films, let alone animation, sort of, we got a bunch of him in the games. And speaking of animation, he was voiced by actor Dan Gilvezan. And he actually starred in Pride of the X-Men that I mentioned up at the top of the show. And so this cartoon was released in 1989, and it was actually poised to be the plot for what would become X-Men the Animated Series, with executive producer and animation pioneer Margaret Leitch. And so if you encounter the Leewalds or Larry Houston at any convention or even watch interviews that they have given, they will tell you all about this in one of the greatest tales about the show. But in a nutshell, execs wanted to see an X-Men cartoon. They were like, great. They were tasked with making the show. A pilot was made. It was Pride of the X-Men. The roster included Professor X, Cyclops, Storm, Nightcrawler, Colossus, Wolverine, Kitty Pryde, and Dazzler, plus a suite of enemies, including Magneto and the Brotherhood of Mutant Evil Terrorists, as they were known at the time. And so this is interesting because, as we've seen in X-Men 97, those suits that they wear at the climax, you know how Psyche has the dome?
Yes.
That suit is from Pride of the X-Men.
Ah.
So all those suits, even the brown, that's the brown Wolverine. That's from Pride of the X-Men. So not only is it from the comics, but they were also like, here's a callback to the original cartoon. And wow. So Colossus was predominantly in that. He's predominantly prominently featured in that one-off. And he was in X-Men the Animated Series quite a bit. He had a few episodes. So did Ileana, actually. Did they do much in X-97? I think he had a cameo maybe, but I don't really recollect readily. But yeah, it was more or less Pride of the X-Men was more or less a coming of the age story focused on Kitty and finding her place with the X-Men. And although it stood very well on its own, the studio was like, hey, what if we reworked the roster a little bit? There are a few new characters that are coming out that are really popular with kids, and we'd like to see them in the show. And so the Leopolds were like, sure. And Larry was like, sure. Which characters are those? And the studio was like, there's one called Rogue. There's one called Jubilee. And then there's this new guy called Gambit that people are really into. So they reworked the entire script. And then they're like, all right. And so when you watch Pride of the X-Men and then you watch Night of the Sentinels, there's a cadence that Kitty Pryde and Jubilee, very similar. Different atmosphere, because it's like three years apart. Mm-hmm. But very different tonally otherwise. It's kind of wild. And I didn't write it here, but I remembered to mention it, that when I was a kid and X-Men was still in the works, they were starting to roll out more cartoons, right? Iron Man and Spider-Man and all that. And I remember seeing, and I think it was in a Wizard magazine, that they were calling for auditions to voice act, to have a guest role in X-Men.
Uh-huh.
Or Avengers. And so two of the characters that they had, one was Black Widow, mm-hmm. and then one was Ileana, because she wasn't cast yet.
Yeah.
My 10, 11 year old, whatever age I was, stupid me, we had a camcorder.
Uh-huh.
I put this camcorder on like my nightstand. And they had sides in the magazine, and they're like, read this script, record yourself on VHS and send your tape in, and it could be you.
Wow.
I 100% did it. And God knows that you probably weren't supposed to do that as a child. I didn't.
I mean, no one ever. Yeah.
I don't know if they had like a parental guardian slip or something. I don't remember that part. I remember very distinctly in my head that I recorded like baby me doing a Russian accent, like trying to be like, Piotr, I want to, and like, I really, like, I was reading in the comic and I was like, I'm going to be Ilya. I'm going to be magic. Didn't get it, obviously, but like, to think back that even existed.
I mean, look, man, we're kids.
I know.
You never know.
But also hilarious that like tween me was like, yeah, I could be Black Widow.
Oh, yeah.
So ridiculous. Oh God, those were the days. So almost was, when it comes to Colossus, there isn't necessarily an almost was, but Daniel Cudmore was supposed to reprise his role as Colossus in the Deadpool films.
Mm-hmm.
However, once he was told that Stefan Kapcik would be dubbing over him, mm-hmm. like, so it was going to be Daniel Cudmore would be the, I don't know, either the mocap or the physical version of him, but he'd be dubbed over like Darth Vader. He was like, nah,
yeah,
I'm good.
Yeah.
And he stepped down, and then they went full CGI with it, which is like, well, oh, that's all right. I think I'm okay with that, to be honest. It would have been a cool cameo.
Would.
But I'm okay with not having him lip sync.
Fair.
And aside that, couldn't find any other actors who even attempted to audition for the role, so you could say that they had it in the bag. So the future of this character in the MCU, I mean, we've not yet seen Deadpool 3, but do you have any
maybe ideas? Cameo, because since Negasonic's in there, you can't like not have
Piotr.
You can't have Piotr. Colossus.
Yeah.
Can't.
I know. It would be sad to not see him again, even if it's just a little bit. But given the nature of how much X-Men we're expecting, there's no way he's not in it.
Have you noticed, like, in all the promo stuff for this for Deadpool Wolverine?
Mm.
I mean,
I don't.
It's only Sean Levy, Ryan Reynolds, and Hugh Jackman.
Yes, that's
And then
very
when
true.
They were in, I think they're in Europe right now.
Yeah.
Cassandra.
Oh, yes.
But it's like, that's it. That's all who's going.
Yeah.
I guess the real indicator.
Is it Emma Darcy?
I think Emma something. The real indicator is if they do a premiere here in LA.
Oh, sorry. I have a crush on Emma Darcy. That's why I said Emma Darcy. It's, what's her name? What's her name? Oh my gosh. I can remember this. Emma.
There's a lot of Emmas.
Emma Deadpool. Emma Corrin.
Yes.
She was Princess Diana in The Crown.
Ah.
Yeah. Emma Corrin's great. Yeah. I saw that. I didn't look at the picture, but I saw it. You know, swipe, like scrolling that there were, that a lady had joined, and I was like, oh, it's Emma Corrin. So that is interesting. But I think that once the floodgates open, or at the New York premiere, which is the week of San Diego, and depending on which territories have released the film by then,
and when the
people might be, and when
the LA premiere is.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to the...
Are they going to have like a proper premiere? I don't know.
It'd be weird to not.
I don't think they will. If they're doing New York, they usually don't do both.
Mm. At so least you mean I'm not going to see him at my fan event?
No, they'll come. It won't be a premiere. They'll come to the fan event, but it's not going to be like a red carpet.
Yeah, they're going to fly to New York the next day. Mm-hmm. Or before. They're going to be there before. Because usually...
No, it's Monday.
Because premieres on Mondays, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they'd be coming back from San Diego... Or no, they're before they'll come back from New York, go to the El Capitan, then come down to San Diego for Saturday.
That sounds exhausting.
Yeah, I'm sure it's terrible, but they probably take jets. But yeah, I don't know. I'm curious. I'm curious if more people will start to join, and if it'll be one or both, the mocap and the voice actor. For Colossus, let alone anybody
else.
Yeah,
even if you did have a premiere, who are you going to invite? You invite any actors that are potentially in it.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to speculate.
100%.
Yeah. Robert Downey Jr., what are you doing here?
I mean, I would, especially considering the merchandise that has been released. There's a lot of Avenger cameos, I just got to say.
I mean, he posted that Avengers flag.
Mm-hmm.
He posted, I mean, they have that. There was that one promo spot. I don't know if you saw it. It had one of the old X-Men. And
I don't watch the promos.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to say the name that was in it then.
Who? Tell me.
Oh, well, it was Wolverine having like a fight with Sabretooth.
Okay, yeah. No, I couldn't avoid that one because one of the Gambit accounts I follow actually reposted it. And I was like, damn it, I didn't want to see it. Sabretooth. The Tyler Mane. I hope that Colossus is among all of them, even if it's just a quick little cameo.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. After that,
yeah,
I don't know what to expect. I mean, there's a possibility that that's it for him. Not the actors, but for Colossus. Although I would like to see Colossus with the X-Men, just in general. It's only right. Yeah. Other than that, nothing. I have no predictions.
Yeah. Who knows?
Who knows? So I was trying to look up, speaking about Deadpool and Wolverine, I was trying to look up the rest of the dates, and I don't see... Oh. Actually, wait a second. So they have the premieres down, but the release dates are all... Oh, we might be in luck. So Jeff and I, before we started recording, actually, Jeff and I were freaking out because we were scared that the release date for the film might be sooner than ours. But Marvel has come through again, and none of the premiere dates fall before July 24th. So we're all getting it at the same time. It's just a matter of time difference. So Europe will start to roll out spoilers Thursday morning, basically, on July 24th. And then the rest of us get it. And then poor Argentina, Australia, and Azerbaijan. I don't know how to say it.
Azerbaijan?
Yeah, there you go. Hey, all and Spain. Oh, UK, Hungary. Actually, quite a bit of Europe doesn't get it till after us. And then Canada, China, India, Iceland, Italy, some others, territories don't get it till the 26th. Wow. So we're actually at near the top of the food chain there, which is nice. Because then we don't have to worry about spoilers too much. But
oh, man, I will I will be there.
So Thursday morning, just avoid that social media, friends.
I'll be at the office. Yeah. I'm walking to Capitan. Mm-hmm. I will be seated in my single middle seat, directly in the middle.
With all your swag.
Just holding your random things.
Your bucket.
As if I don't have so many buckets.
So many buckets. Oh, that's going to be a good time. Can't wait. Last but not least, suggested reading. Kind of tough, also not, but I narrowed it down to 4. Uncanny X-Men through and through, particularly issues 129, 183, 197, 303, and 542. 1992's X-Men Volume 2, primarily issues 17, 18, and 19 from Fabian Nezeza and Andy Kubert, as well as Joe Rosas. That's when you definitively see the, I believe it's their actual on page death for his parents, mm-hmm. and some of the intertwining of, Ileana and such. But honorable mention for issues 40 through 45 as well. Really good stuff. That's his Magneto time. And then 2006's Colossus Bloodlines. So it's a compilation of issues from David Hein and Jorge Lucas. I almost said George Lucas. From Jorge Lucas. And so this is where Colossus traces back his lineage to Grigori. A lot of stuff goes down with Mr. Sinister, who we did not mention in this episode, but have talked about in our Gambit one, as well as Mikhail. And then, of course, Giant Size X-Men number 1, featuring the iconic moments from, the classic X-Men. It's 68 pages of goodness. So this is definitely a great place to start. And with that, that's the end of the show.
Whoa.
Thanks, Joey Lawrence. Whoa.
Wow.
Thanks for listening. Next episode. So it's been a long time coming. Mm. But we're finally dipping a toe into the Summers family lore. Mm. And we're going to cover Cable.
The least toxic one.
Oh my god! Yeah, actually,
or the least traumatic.
The least. I don't know about that.
Oh wow!
Oh, they all got trauma.
I mean, yeah, they're all pretty bad.
Oh yeah, they all have trauma. Oh my god!
Jane, gosh.
Scott,
son.
So we'll talk about Cable next, and. Finally, thank you to all of our Patreon supporters and a special We Are Groot salute this week to Katie, Chris, Edgar, Robin, Joe, Liz, Eve, Laura, Melanie, Nats, Sherry, Andrea, Ed, Andrew, Jenny, Tyler, Ashley, and Ariel. Follow us on social, STRKC and TRST. And if you like what you hear, please review, rate, and subscribe.
Yeah. Once again, thanks for listening. We will catch y'all in the next one.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
It's time to fight dirty.
Time to sweep the leg, Johnny.
Hey, pick on someone your own size.
That's such a you thing to say. Go get him, Tiger. Big CGI fight coming up.